facility very often because your attention is usually and rightly focused on economic matters, and most of my time has been spent over in the political patch. But from time to time, you look over there, and then I'm likely to get an invitation to talk about something that hopefully I might know a little about. I notice there's been a change this time. In addition to a great many old and stalwart warriors of past battles, there are a great many people here from what I find in conservative circles are now piercingly referred to as the third generation. And I'm very glad indeed to see you here. It emboldens me, as a matter of fact, to repeat perhaps some things that for the rest of you, I apologize, may sound a bit tediously familiar coming from me. But they will be hopefully a little fresher to the younger members of the audience and suitably provocative to all of you. I do recall sitting on the lawn of Great Elm in September 1960 up in Connecticut when young American freedom was being found about 50 feet away by 90 young people, and Marvin Lehman, Brent Bozell, and I were sitting over there having it all cool and in a, waiting to see what would come out. Somebody came over and said, we just picked the name of the organization, probably called Young Americans for Freedom, or YAF. And Marvin Lehman immediately said, you realize that makes the rest of us Old Americans for Freedom, or OAFs. That was 24 years ago, and the situation hasn't improved. From our standpoint, I guess, in that respect. I want to talk to you a little bit about this topic, and it will be only a little bit because our time is fairly short. We want to use the time for comments and questions. On the general subject of conservatism, yesterday and tomorrow is our title for this first panel. It is amazing how many people can go through an experience like the election we just had and come out with interpretations of it that either don't hold water or are ill-considered to some extent. It is necessary to look at these things with fairly unemotional eyes. You may know the story of the fellow who went to his doctor and said, I look in the mirror, my face is blotchy, and I've got bags under my eyes, and I'm ugly. What's the matter with me? The doctor says, I don't know, but your eyesight's perfect. Is our eyesight perfect about what has just happened? Well, I'm going to give you my interpretation for what it's worth, and then you will hear from Cliff White, and we'll hear from you, and perhaps I will hold something useful will emerge. I think there has been an anti-liberal majority and a healthy one in the United States for very nearly 20 years. I have been at some pains and various things I've written to try to prove that. Remember that in 1968, Richard Nixon defeated Humphrey narrowly, but that George Wallace was getting 10 million votes for him. That 4 years later, Nixon won 49 states to one, but Reagan, back to 76 at home, but Reagan won handsomely in 1980 and overwhelmingly in 1984. That doesn't seem all that hard to prove. What is not so fully understood is an anti-liberal majority is translatable into a conservative majority only if we understand deep down inside ourselves that there are two kinds of conservatives at the margin. Spectrum of opinion. Basically, in the terms of the old and familiar analysis, I would judge, just for easy figuring, that of the 60% anti-liberal majority in the United States, about 40% are basically economic conservatives, and the other 20% are what we have come to call social conservatives, people who were formerly in the old Roosevelt coalition, but have moved away from it and are now voting regularly at the presidential anti-liberal, which means conservative, which means, in that context, Republican. It doesn't surprise or bother me at all that these two types types of conservatives, which do overlap, fortunately, a great many people can be both fairly happy, can agree that the liberals have played fast and loose both with our economic principles and with the essential social binding factors into society, the issues that are called the family values, morality, things of that sort. But there is nothing that requires a person to agree on both points. There are plenty of economic conservatives who have all sorts of reservations about Terry Falwell, and there are plenty of social conservatives who aren't all that concerned about balanced budgets. But give them a typical Democrat, and the Lord has been giving them typical Democrats, and they will come out and in their vast majority vote against him and in favor of a conservative like the one we have now in the presidency, who combines a dedication to both types of conservatism in his person. That, I think, gives us a reasonable hope that at the presidential level, for the foreseeable future, the Republican Party can be in quite good shape, because I don't believe Pache, Gary Hart, there are all that many new, really new ideas in politics. I think the Democrats are fundamentally stuck with the ones they've got. That said, Geraldine Ferraro may even be right. If they are, they're going to keep on losing in about the same proportions if the Republicans have the sense, and here's an if of some importance, have the sense to keep on nominating somebody who can convincingly appeal to both types of anti-liberalism. We forget that, as we forgot it in 1976, and nominated Gerald Ford, a very sound economic conservative, but a man who hadn't the slightest conception that a social conservative could be appealed to by a Republican, who even went to the trouble of making Nelson Rockefeller his vice president in an attempt to wipe the last social conservative sentiment out of the Republican Party. If we nominate a man like that, and if the Democrats in the same year are, as they were then, either smart or lucky, and pick another born-again Christian from the South, some of those social conservatives can temporarily be repatriated to the Democratic Party, and you can get a narrow Democratic victory, as they got in 1976. It takes a lot of things coming together to make that many mistakes. I don't, for the foreseeable future, I'm happy to say, see the Republican Party at least necessarily making any longer that mistake. I think there will be enough social conservative sentiment the president articulated in the convention of 1988, certainly, to require a combination. But what about the Congress? There, of course, is the problem. The Senate, in which we stare straight ahead at deep, deep trouble in 1986, the House of Representatives. Here is a House very close to the people, elected all of them every 2 years, in which the coalition of conservatives of the two types is not working nearly so well. The Republican Congressional Campaign Committee spent $50 million and turned up with a net increase of what? 14? 15 members. Some of those they probably should have gotten without. They are nowhere near a simple majority of the House of Representatives and have no visible prospect of getting there. And frankly, if I sound a little bit angry about that, it is because I am. It isn't altogether the Democrats' fault. I grant you, and Cliff has made this point to me and will make it, I'm sure, again later, I grant you that simple redistricting, gerrymandering under Democratic legislation has a certain amount to do with it, clearly in California, for example. And something can be done to reform in that way. But it isn't the whole story. I was looking through the election returns the day after the election and the House returns, and I came to the state of Louisiana. Maybe wrong about this, but I think I read. I'm pretty sure I did. There wasn't a single delegation of about six congressmen from Louisiana. Not one of them was even opposed by the Republican Party. Now, what's going on here? That isn't gerrymandering. That's just plain failure to stand up and fight. And don't fight, we can't win. As our New York State lottery slogan says, you got to be in it to win it. And I was in speaking at Averett College, Danville, Virginia, the day after the election. Right down there on the border of North Carolina, not far from Greensboro. Local conservative columnists said to me they didn't even oppose our Democratic congressman here. Why, he's to the right of Attila the Hun. I said, yeah, I'll bet he also votes, though, for Tip O'Neill for Speaker of the House and organize the entire House with Joe Adibo in charge of the Subcommittee of Appropriations that is in charge of the MX. Turned his head a little bit to one side, didn't have anything much to say about that. There are approximately, I'm told, I haven't studied this personally, 105 congressional districts that are either not contested at all in the Republican Party or not seriously contested. Now, in some cases, I know why. I'm sure that in Louisiana, although it has gone Republican at the gubernatorial level and has gone Republican repeatedly at the presidential level, nonetheless, the reputation of the party locally doesn't easily sustain a congressional candidate. Well, that's all right. There is a way, so help me God, I'm going to spend some time trying to find out if there is. I know other people who are. If there is a way, we are going to try to pick out those districts and encourage independents to run against incumbent Democrats on the single and sole ground that if there is one thing that needs to be done with the American society at the moment, it is to drag Tip O'Neill kicking and screaming off the roster of the House of Representatives. We can't keep our minds on that. We certainly don't deserve the kind of support that I think the American people are going to give us. The Democrats are very smart in their individual races. I was out in Tulsa just before the election. Jim Jones did a marvelous job there of not looking like a typical liberal Democrat. He isn't a typical liberal Democrat. He just votes like one when he gets to Washington. Part of the time on the key things, and so do the rest of them, good as they may individually be. And we have to make that point. And if you lose once or twice making it, at least you're making it. Sooner or later, we are going to have to tackle that issue seriously and design it with people in those districts who are reflective of the sentiment of the district and ready to vote against the Democratic organization of the House. Probably have guessed there's a great deal more I can say. We've got yet to hear from Cliff, who is older and wiser than I am, and I have to get a 2:30 plane back to New York, and I'm going to, and I want you to have some time for questions, so we'll let it go at that. Thank you very much.